This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Monday, 13th of September, 2021, and we're seeing on Friday, at least in the U.S., not sure if it was this Apple news, Peter, but we saw quite a heavy sell-off into the close. And it's shaping up like we've seen in the previous 4 months. We've talked about this pattern where we've seen the third Friday of the month. That would be this Friday in the case of September. Seeing some dodgy price action probably linked to these call options or options in general on the cash S&P 500. So besides the Apple story, are you seeing anything broader that might be spooking this this market?
Well, we had the PPI, right, in the US, which hit 10% yearly gain. So that was, I think, one of the highest recorded changes in the producer price index of the US. And we know the producer price. Yeah,
you're saying 10%. I might just jotted it down. Is it 8.3% year on year? But maybe there was another metric that was 10%.
I was just the intern call. I heard 10%, but 8.3. That sounds like more reasonable. And we have 9.5 in China. So yeah. Arguably, a lot of pressure still coming through the pipes, and that combined with the Apple news, we'll talk about that later in this session. But you know that stock was down a little bit more than 3%, and being a heavyweight with a $2.5 trillion market value, it does have an impact on the technology sector. I just think there was a little bit of fatigue. We had been range trading for quite some while in a lot of the U.S. equity indices, and as well as you pointed out, we had the VIX on the rise as well. I think we closed at 21. So you just sense a little bit of the nervousness, and you have these COVID-19 waves, in multiple countries, especially in Asia, which is creating all these hiccups and supply chain constraints. But I'll talk about that again. And then, interestingly enough, we're actually bouncing higher this morning, both in Europe and the US, despite the ugly close on Friday and the, I would say, worsening news flow out of China. So we have two big news is coming out. So the Soho China, which is a real estate developer listed in Hong Kong, was about to get acquired by Blackstone, the US private equity, the private equity group there, which is scooping up real estate assets across many different countries around the world. And they just pulled out of the deal. It's a $3 billion deal. And as you said, I mean, with the common prosperity theme in China. Evolving in China, you have Evergrande, and the clampdown on the inequality in China, and housing is very much a focus and education is a focus. It makes a lot of sense for Blackstone to pull out of this. And then you have Beijing basically ordering the breakup of Alipay. So they're breaking up the payments and the credit lending business. Already 2 months ago, the government in China ordered the back end, the databases, the user data to be split between the two businesses, and all the user data of Alipay is now being moved to a joint venture, which is partly owned by the Chinese government. So you're seeing the Hang Seng technology index down 2% today.
And just to round out the news flow out of China, we have a big storm, typhoon, on the way up the coast. It's disrupted one port, and another one is closing, the one in Shanghai, obviously a massive port there. And you mentioned COVID cases, 22 COVID cases in Fujian province, a very populous province in southeastern China. So, this supply chain disruption story is not going anywhere fast. And actually, staying on China a little bit, I want to jump over to you, Ola, because we have some very odd, we talked about in this morning's internal call, some very odd and diverging developments in the metals markets, where we have iron ore, almost you could argue, collapsing, where some of these other metals are sharply on the rise here. Take us through what's going on.
Well, it is all to do with China's efforts to clamp down on pollution and moving away from being the production capital of the world in terms of exporting some of these very highly polluting metals, the process which is very polluting. So what we're seeing right now is the clampdown is start really in the steel industry, where steel the steel capital of China is also the region where the Winter Olympics are going to be held in early 2022, and clearly we cannot go to the Olympics with a black cloud, so we need a blue sky, and that is leading to clampdowns on production. That's lowering the demand one for iron ore shipped in from Brazil and Australia. So the iron ore price here on slide 8, which is the iron ore futures in Shanghai, it's down 17% over the last year. And just recently, we've seen an acceleration in the rally in aluminium and nickel, also two metals being processed and produced in China. And it's raised concerns about the supply constraints for two of these quite critically important so-called green metals over the coming years. So while demand domestically in China may be slowing, it's not slowing down outside of China, where we see this comeback in both Europe and the US. If you take a look at steel prices in the US, for instance, they're up now, I think, a factor 3 or 4 over the last year. So steel prices are on the defensive in China, but they're most certainly going up elsewhere, because if China doesn't want to produce the steel that's required for, then someone else needs to pick it up, and that's at least for now creating some supply problems or bottlenecks. So iron ore down, nickel, aluminium, now also recently copper on the rise as a part of that.
Yeah, interesting. And of course, iron ore is an input, not an end product, whereas these other metals are more sort of end products in
exactly.
other processes. So I guess that's the key point and takeaway there. To round out what happened on Friday with this risk-off move, we're seeing the classic risk-off combination you would expect in foreign exchange. So the dollar picking back up. The ECB was a real disappointment for anybody looking for anything last week. And the euro is passively going back to just trading against, sort of neutrally against the market. So you see on slide 4, euro dollar picking up downside momentum there. Next key area, arguably just above 117.50, where we're starting to sort of fully erase that recent rally wave if we're heading below there. And you know, sympathetic moves and crosses like euro yen, a little bit so in euro Swiss as well. And the FX focus for today, actually quite interesting. I'm not sure how much it'll be felt in the market. I think the Norwegian krona may move simply on these direction oil price, risk sentiment, but we do have a general election. Theoretically, a heck of a lot could be at stake for Norway, because the critical political focus in the debates, at least, is the country's investment, ongoing investment and future investment, especially in fossil fuel energy, oil and gas, of course. And it does look like the left of center parties will be cobbling together some sort of victory here. But if you look at the sort of percentages and what sort of government may form, it is difficult to see an overwhelming mandate for these the center of left parties, which are in various shades of wanting to reduce investment from sort of we need to slow it down over a longer time frame, to the, of course, the Greens, who want to stop it as quickly as possible. The Green Party, quite small here relative to Germany, not as mainstream a party here. You can see this on slide 5, the different parties. So again, what will be the strength of this coalition? But certainly worth watching the Norwegian krona over this if there's a surprise in today's results. And we're heading into a Norges Bank next week, where we're looking for the first rate hike of the cycle there. So an interesting goings on in Norway. Okay, Mr. Garnwey, we have your focus. You know, we talked a little bit about the fresh potential for some disruption in Chinese ports, but you got some other angles here on the inflation supply chain.
Yeah, a couple of things. So one of the articles that was running on the front page of the FC this morning was that, you know, inflation is turning its ugly head in Latin America, and specifically in Brazil. We have a time series here going back to 2001. We are on slide 6, by the way. And you can see we're approaching very fast 10% inflation rate, headline inflation rate in Brazil, up from 2% at the low point during the pandemic last year. And it's causing a lot of the Latin America central banks to guidance interest rate hikes to cool off these inflationary pressures. So it's really worth noting. And if you're still in the transitory camp on inflation. And then I love this chart as well, the one to the left with the US Treasury total return index, the benchmark index there, less the headline inflation in the US. I mean, with this speed, we'll soon have a negative return over a 6-year period if you invested in US bonds over that period. And that's with inflation rate right now sitting significantly above the current yield offered. So you wonder who is really buying these treasury, unless it's, you know, it's asset liability management policies dictated on by on pension companies and life insurance companies. And then I think the most interesting thing was this headline from FT as well. The supply chain crisis will leave permanent scars, UPS warns. And the key takeaway from this article is basically that the UPS is being questioned by a lot of its multinational customers that they want to diversify basically their manufacturing capacity. So a little bit less emphasis on China. They need more optionality, as they say. And they're asking UPS, where can we put manufacturing? And basically the head of UPS's non-US business basically says in this article that over the next 5-10 years, we'll see a massive transition towards what's called regional manufacturing. So I think that's, again, will underpin inflation because it is more expensive to produce stuff in closer to key rich consumer markets in the US and Europe.
Yeah, they're discovering what happened when they put all their eggs in one basket in the former tendency towards concentrating. There was single source, lowest cost, but then without the diversification, as you said, there's no optionality and you're in big trouble when that single source experiences disruptions. All right, let's go through this Apple story because I think it's really critical. We've seen the big antitrust push in China. It comes from a very different place, very different ruling style. But some of the issues that China is moving against are, of course, issues in the US and elsewhere with these massive platform and monopoly companies. And we're starting to get a little bit of a sense of the rubber is hitting the road on the antitrust movement. What is this latest story and what do you think is opening up in terms of direction here for the antitrust move?
Yeah, the story of Apple and Epic Games, if I may take a few minutes on this podcast for this, because we need to set the story for this. So Epic Games is the creator of Fortnite, this very popular game. And Epic Games is a gaming developer that has been massively successful on other platforms before the takeoff of the smartphone and the App Store. But over time, the mobile became sort of the preferred gaming platform or console, if you will. And Epic Game had to move into to the App Store, but they live off purchases you do on the game. So you could buy a gun or a skin or whatever it is for Fortnite. And Epic Game was used to collecting the majority of those gaming revenues for selling these skins and armor or what have you. But Apple, with their 30% cut on the App Store, said, oh, we want to take a little bit of that. And Epic Games were just furious because their success was not really that dependent. It was just Apple's was just another distribution channel. Why would they have to take 30% of
it? It's where people happen to sign up for the game, not because...
Exactly. Yeah. They're not signing up because it's Apple. They're signing up because they won the game. Apple just happens to be the distribution vehicle. And Epic Games did a smart thing. They actually they did a clever thing. They diverted people away from using Apple's payment system to their own payment system to save the 30%. And then immediately Apple said, hey, you're violating our business terms. They kicked Epic Games out of their App Store. And then Epic Games launched into this now very famous court case. And we got a ruling on Friday. So the judge said that Apple has not justified adequately enough the 30% cut it takes for this distribution channel. They're forcing now Apple to allow other developers like Epic Games to divert users to other payment routes or options. So not any longer being able to collect the 30% on these purchases. So I think it's a very big move. And then Epic Game, of course, is being forced also by the court to pay the dollars that they avoided by making their changes before they were kicked out. And I think this is, as you said, John, I think it's a major event because I think it's rubber on the road about what is coming for these platform companies. And it's heating up here in Europe as well. So if you're invested in Apple, Microsoft, Facebook, Google, all these major technology quasi monopolies, I think we'll see more of this.
Okay, great stuff. And definitely worth watching. And there's some other active cases that we need to track as well. And of course, we'll bring updates as if and when any of those see the light of day. Ola, let's look at oil markets because we've talked a lot about natural gas lately. It's providing lots of pressure here, but oil also closing last week pretty much on a high note, if I'm looking at your slide 9 correctly.
Yeah, sorry about the slight delay there, John. Indeed, and it just goes, the whole energy sector right now is really receiving a strong lift. We are, as you mentioned, gas prices at record levels. But in the US, it is the continued loss of produced barrels from the US Gulf of Mexico, parts of the US part. And we've just seen a very, very slow recovery. Still more around half of the day daily production is offline following Hurricane Ida, which struck more than 2 weeks ago. And it is this process which is by now probably have removed somewhat near 30 million barrels from the market. And that's providing that underlying support. We had one of the major oil traders out over the weekend, basically looking for a very strong recovery in Asian demand into the fourth quarter, also providing some support. But generally, it is the loss of barrels from US that is adding this bit to the market. So look out for 73.70 here on Brent. We're not far from it. It was the almost the high overnight. If we do take that out, then we will be looking up towards that area of resistance above 75. Just a note, we got monthly oil market reports out from OPEC today and the International Energy Agency tomorrow, and we have seen a slow monthly reductions in demand forecast during the past few months here. So that will be interesting to watch how they see the oil market now with the Delta virus easing in some areas, but still relevant in several areas as well.
Yes, indeed. Now let's go to the macro calendar for today and the rest of the week. Something I don't have on the calendar, but we need to be watching closely, is the whole fiscal cycle in the U.S. We have, of course, this Senate-passed infrastructure bill that the Dems have promised they will vote on before September 27th, but some progressive protesting that they won't vote on that until they get promises on more aggressive presentation or approval or fast-tracking, whatever you want to call it, of the bigger $3 to $3.5 trillion stimulus bill. And then on that note, we're seeing some Democratic House proposals on raising the corporate income tax again, the one that Trump famously slashed significantly, and on the highest income tax bracket, as well as I saw another story circulating on capital gains tax, all at a time when we're heading into the whole debt ceiling business with the end of the fiscal cycle here at the end of this month. And that combines with how long that process gets stretched out, how long if the Treasury has to start implementing emergency measures and then has to balloon issuance again in Q4 once we are on the other side of that. So that's just an ongoing process. I'll try to track it as closely as I can day to day. But in the meantime, you can see a lot of things populating the economic calendar for this week on slide 10. I won't pull out a lot of things. I just think the focus, do look at Australia out tonight with the business confidence survey, but also the RBA's Governor Lowe. I think Australia is definitely shifting towards a get people vaccinated and away from zero COVID policy. That's going to be interesting to see that play out. But the U.S. data points this week, three of them are interesting. Tomorrow's CPI, August CPI out of the U.S., Thursday's retail sales, and the degree to which behavior is changing, both because of fading stimulus check effect, because of the Delta outbreak, but also because we saw at the beginning of September those last pandemic benefits rolling off. And then the University of Michigan sentiment survey after we plunged to a new low, even worse than the pandemic outbreak months on that particular survey, suggests that things are really headed south in the U.S., at least in terms of sentiment. All right, I think we're going to call it a wrap there. I think it's going to be a busy week ahead for news and for interesting whether we see this market activity picking up after we saw that big spike into the close on Friday and this monthly pattern, et cetera, possibly linked to the options market in the U.S. So stay on your toes out there, be careful, and we'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.